And welcome to another edition of Subject to Discussion. And I got the red lights flashing all around me here. It's like being in Republican country. I'm in a red state, I guess, literally. But and welcome to the show. Actually, Sly is in the chat room from the Michael Badnarik forum. So a little bit of message board advertising. At least it worked to get one person into the chat room. Anyway, if you're listening to the show, you go in lvrocks.com. You click on Cam and Chat to go into the chat room and join us in the discussion that we're going to have forthcoming. In a few minutes, Mark Schulman from the American Future blog will be joining us. And his blog is AmericanFuture.typepad.com. So I'll just put in the chat room in a few minutes. But of course, before we get the guest on, I'm going to kind of run through the news a little bit, a little news and comment. And of course, for me, the big thing was the report coming in about CBS, the evening news, the memo gate that embroiled Dan Rather. And it says CBS issued a damning independent review Monday of mistakes related to last fall's 60 Minutes Wednesday report of President Bush's National Guard Service and fired three news executives and a producer for their myopic zeal in rushing it on the air. And, of course, Dan Rather was spared, and so was CBS Evening News President Andrew Hayward. They're both spared because Rather is stepping down, but they escaped without any disciplinary action. He says the system broke down, and this one for sure, said Louis D. Bacardi, retired chief executive officer of the Associated Press, who conducted the investigation with former Republican Attorney General Dick Thornburgh. It was a 224-page report. And fired were Mary Mapes, who was the story's producer about the Memogate, Josh Howard, executive producer of 60 Minutes Wednesday, Howard's top deputy, Mary Murphy, and CBS News senior vice president Betsy West. So, I mean, still the story itself was valid, but the documents that they came up with were forged and not accurate. And it's about the type, the font on the typewriter. There's no way, apparently, within reason, that it's a very slim chance that the font that was on that memo could have been around at the time because of the technology wasn't as advanced at that time. So, but some people are saying they should have went further with the investigation and actually maybe fire Dan Rather outright or emptied out CBS Evening the CBS News hierarchy completely. And I'm just going on continuing with it. And it says President Bush was reelected and Dan Rather wasn't. And oh, Oliver Queen is in the chat room. Who's that? I wonder. That, in a nutshell, is the outcome of a bitter 4-month struggle between the White House, which insisted there was no basis for the 60 Minutes report, casting doubt on the President's National Guard Service and a major network whose controversial anchor chose to give up his job before release of the outside panel's report. And, of course, Rather wasn't doing the news on Monday when the report came out either. He was on his ranch in Texas or wherever he was. And it says, although the panel's report found no political bias by anyone at CBS, which is baloney, we know it, it was clearly a setback for the mainstream media against an administration that has often stiff-armed or ignored journalists whom Bush calls unreliable filter between him and the public. So, it just the whole mainstream media is going down the drain. I mean, just and the bloggers, managed to unearth all that evidence against Dan Rather and pretty much led to his resignation. Because I believe if it wasn't for that, he would still be sitting there in the anchor chair at CBS Evening News. And also, of course, we had the mudslides in California. There's all the torrential rain, and they say now there's 12 people confirmed dead. And that poor man and his three children and his wife supposedly have been confirmed as among the dead. So it's a horrible tragedy over there. And the footage from that, I thought I was watching the Superman movie because the way they showed that mountain caving in looked like a scene from the end of the Superman movie with Lois Lane getting gobbled up in the earthquake. But also in Schwarzenegger, the Gropinator-in-Chief, he was out there saying how Californians are all helping
out. Gropinator?
Gropinator-in-Chief. He's Groper-in-Chief, the Gropinator.
I thought that was Bill Clinton, Gropinator.
That's the other side. Oh. We're talking about the California.
California.
California. I will pump you up.
My name is Arnold. I'll pump you up.
I will pump you up to vote for, we have a caller.
I'll break
you. That's probably the guest. Let me see. Where are we at here with time? Oh, man, I never get through all my damn news. U.S. exports are on the slide thanks to solid growth from Jon Snow. I mean, this is like, maybe I'm not as intelligent as I thought to figure this one out, but it says U.S. exports sank 2.3% in November, driving the U.S. trade deficit to an all-time high of $60.3 billion, which U.S. Treasury Secretary John Snow says result of a strong U.S. economic growth outpacing that of other countries. I mean, I don't understand that at all. I mean, if our trade deficit is going up, that should say something's wrong, because all none of our stuff is made here anymore. We're having to buy all the stuff from overseas. That's why, you know, we need more of these manufacturing jobs here in the United States. I mean, it makes, I don't know, I mean, it's too easy to explain. I don't know. White House spokesman Scott McClellan said President George W. Bush sees the record trade deficit as evidence the United States is the global driver of economic growth. I'm like, huh? I don't know. Well, exports fell to a five-month low of $95.6 billion. Imports rose 1.3% to a record $158.8 billion as the bill for imported oil rose by 17.7%, or more than $2 billion, to a record of $14.2 billion we're spending on oil. I mean, that's pretty much a no-brainer there. We need to do some of these cars, get these hybrids out there and everything else. I mean, just it's ridiculous to spend this money for oil. We should be able to get gasohol or something in these cars and try, get these oil companies out of our pockets. And rising U.S. deficit with China impacting high-tech industries, U.S. reporters, isn't there a no-brainer? No kidding. The burgeoning U.S. trade deficit with China is beginning to impact American high-tech industries, once believed immune to lower-wage Chinese competition, a report for the U.S. Congress-mandated commission said. 1.5 million American jobs have been displaced from 1989 to 2003 as a result of the growing trade deficit with China. The deficit increased 20-fold over the last 14 years, rising from $6.2 billion in 1989 to $124 billion in 2003 with China. It's amazing, isn't it? I mean, it's expected to have increased over 20% in 2004 to more than $150 billion, according to the study. I mean, it's incredible. But I'm just moving along a little bit. And President Bush warned Congress on his Social Security. President Bush tried to increase pressure on members of Congress who were leery of his ideas to change Social Security, telling them that they could be risking their jobs. I happen to believe that believe people who have been elected to office who ignore problems will face a price at the ballot box. Democrats say they, too, will make an issue of Social Security in the midterm elections. Republicans should be worried, said Democratic National Committee spokesman Jano Cabrera. Whether Republicans are cutting benefits, raising taxes, or further exploding the budget deficit, Democrats intend to make Social Security a key issue in 2006. So the war is on with that. And let's see, Social Security. And the Congress is back in, and two issues are going to divide the Congress. Like you said last week, it's going to be the judicial nominations, and also the changes to the Social Security program are going to be the lines in the sand that they're going to draw as they butt heads and over the next 2 years, year. For the next congressional elections, and it's 8:15. So let's bring on our guest, Mark Shulman from American Future. Hello.
Hello, Sean. How are you?
Ah, fine, sir. How are you? Thank you for coming on.
Glad to be here.
Thank you. Now, tell listeners out there a little bit about your blog who may not be familiar with it.
Okay. Well, the blog deals specifically with foreign affairs, and really from three perspectives. First of all, it includes a lot of information that's available from the media, principally from domestic and foreign newspapers, and some things that other bloggers publish. The second aspect of it is that I include my opinion and analysis of some of the events. And thirdly, I present the opinions and analysis of others that I disagree with. And then there is a companion blog called American Future Resources that so far includes about 60 articles that have appeared in such foreign affairs journals as Foreign Affairs, Policy Review, World Policy Review. And the articles in there, I think, are all well written, and they're from a variety of ideological standpoints. Mm-hmm. So I view that as sort of a library for people who want to learn and who perhaps are someday interested in writing an article or starting their own blog.
Very good. Now, what's your background?
Well, briefly, the biography would be that I have an undergraduate degree in political science from MIT. Then I have an MBA from the Sloan School at MIT. Mm. I then worked for 20 years as a securities analyst on Wall Street covering the technology industry. Following that, for the next 8 years, I was an independent consultant on corporate strategy, working with the senior managements of technology companies. And that kind of came to a grinding halt in the year 2000 when the internet bubble burst.
Mm, I bet.
And since then, I have been, I guess I'd have to use the word retired. And blogging has filled up a lot of time and provided some structure to my life. And since it really is political science, it sort of goes all the way back to the beginning when I was a 17-year-old freshman in college.
Wow, 17-year-old. Skipped a grade or something?
Yeah, I skipped, what was it, the eighth grade.
Wow, very good, very good. My sister skipped a grade. Fortunately, I got held back two grades, so I kind of made up for it. No. Now, what was your inspiration to starting your blog? Did you just feel that there was a void? I mean, how long have you been blogging?
I've been blogging for 4 months.
Wow. You got a good reputation for just 4 months.
Well, I put a lot of time into it.
Yeah.
And the inspiration was frustration. Mm-hmm. And I guess a desire to be heard. The frustration was over what I considered to be a misrepresentation of various events in the world, specifically related to the election campaign here. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, thinking that an awful lot of people my age, of baby boomer age, who were anti-war activists during the Vietnam era, as I was, were making a very critical mistake in equating what was happening in Iraq, or more generally, the Bush foreign policy, with what transpired during the Vietnam era. I mean, in the Vietnam era, we were supporting a dictatorship, mm-hmm. namely the South Vietnamese dictatorship. And with Iraq, we were overthrowing a dictatorship. Of course, I'm oversimplifying it a little bit, but what I found really difficult to understand was how the same person could be against our government for both supporting a dictatorship and overthrowing a dictatorship.
Makes sense. That makes sense.
So, you know, as well as I can describe it verbally as opposed to in writing, that was what really got me going. And I, more specifically, what got me upset was the large number of people, including people in our government, who were saying that Bush had described the Saddam Hussein regime as an imminent threat, when in point of fact, he never said that. And in fact, there were instances where Bush's statements were that if we were to wait until the threat were imminent, then it would be too late to do anything about it. Mm-hmm. So I view this as a rather significant misrepresentation of the reality of the situation, and that got my juices flowing.
Yeah. What about today? They had the report that the weapons of mass destruction search has ended. I mean, that pretty much was a no-brainer. I mean, there was an intelligence failure there, big time. What would you feel about that report coming out today?
Okay. Well, first of all, the fact that we didn't find them doesn't mean that they weren't there. Mm-hmm. Saddam had plenty of time to get rid of them between the time our troop buildup started and our troops actually got there. There have been any number of reports of at least some of the weapons winding up in Syria, which may or may not be true. But I remember very well in the days before the invasion began, that our satellites depicted or picked up a large number of trucks moving from Iraq into Syria, and they may or may not have had some of the weapons. Secondly, he could have destroyed them during the, I guess it would have been 4 or 5 months that our troops were being built up. And thirdly, there is the possibility that the CIA was simply wrong, and he had destroyed all of them even before the troop buildup began. And that would mean that his reason for being resistant to UN inspectors coming in would be that he didn't want anyone to know that he didn't have them.
True. Now, if he dismantled his weapons, where's all that highly dangerous materials at? If he dismantled, where is that stuff at? Yeah, that's probably the big question right there, huh?
Yes. Well, some of it could be in Syria, and there have been reports of some of it moving from Syria to Darfur as part of the genocide that's going on there. Now, I have no inside information on that, but I'd further point out that it was not just our intelligence agencies that believed there to be weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. The intelligence agencies of other Western countries, including the French, and including among non-Western countries, Egypt and Jordan believed that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq at the time of the invasion. So if we did make a big mistake, we weren't alone in making that mistake.
True, because the British were involved and a lot of the other countries were involved too. Now, what do you think of the election this week of Mahmoud Abbas, who can be in charge of the Palestinians? A lot of people are saying it's a hopeless sign. We should bend over backwards to make him empower him so he can make a difference in a roadmap for peace with Israel.
Well, I would agree that things look more hopeful now than they have in a very long time. But at the same time, I guess I have to remain skeptical, because every time things have looked like they were headed in the right direction over there, it's wound up not being the case. So I guess while I'm hopeful, I'm definitely in the I'll believe it when I see it camp. The other thing that I'd add is that I also believe that Bush is absolutely right in saying that we will be supportive of the Palestinian cause if and when the Palestinian government effectively eliminates terrorism and becomes democratic. A big influence on Bush has been Nathan Sharansky, who is a Russian refusenik who emigrated from Russia to Israel in, I guess it was 1985. It was roughly 20 years ago. And who has written extensively, including a recent book, on the necessity to negotiate with a democratic government among the Palestinians, because if you have a government like Arafat's government, effectively a dictatorship, the only way dictators remain in power is to have an external enemy. And that, in a way, explains why Arafat just couldn't see fit to reach a deal with the Israelis.
Well, plus Arafat was basically a terrorist. I mean, he blew up those jets in 72, correct?
That's right.
And the
best line I ever heard about Arafat was that expecting him to give up terrorism would be equivalent to expecting Tiger Woods to give up golf.
There you go. Or somebody said Ted Kennedy giving up drinking. Yeah, it's never going to happen.
Well, maybe even better.
No, when he died, he actually died right in the middle of this program, and we almost jumped up and down for joy because, he was not. I mean, when Clinton brought him to the White House, everything. What is he doing with him at the White House? I do lean left. I am more or less a Democrat. Even I also am like, what is he doing there with that terrorist? I was shaking my head when he did that. I mean,
and what was he doing at the UN back in the 70s? When Arafat made his first appearance at the UN General Assembly, I think it was in 74, not only was he wearing a uniform when he addressed the representatives of the world, he actually had a gun in a holster.
Yeah, I remember that. I mean, I've seen footage of that. Exactly. I mean, I don't know what... I'm glad he's gone, so maybe now we can finally get these two states living side by side. Where are you looking to the future? Do you think something we can make these steps towards that? I know Sharon's pulling off the settlements off the West Bank and Gaza. Is that going to help?
I think it's a start. The analogy I would make, and I'm afraid one has to rely on analogies, is with Richard Nixon, who was no hero of mine, believe me, but Richard Nixon had absolutely unimpeachable anti-communist credentials. And that's what enabled him to open the door to China in 72, because with those credentials, no one could say that he was soft on communism. Had there been another president, the domestic repercussions, the domestic U.S. repercussions of coming to terms with the Chinese might have been rather severe. Well, the analogy is that Sharon has unimpeachable anti-terrorist credentials, and at least until recently has been viewed as an Israeli extremist, if I can put it that way. So if there's anyone in Israel that can actually achieve a withdrawal from at least part of the territories that were occupied as a result of the 1967 war, it would be someone like Sharon as opposed to someone from the Israeli Labor Party who would lack those credentials.
True. Well, Sharon's basically known as a hard ass, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, and now with Mahmoud Abbas in there now, President Bush has invited him to the White House. I mean, do you think that's a good move? I think it's a brilliant move.
I do too. Yeah. I think that that Bush has made some very good moves lately, that being one of them, and appointing his father and Bill Clinton to head up the tsunami relief effort is another one.
Really? You like that? I mean, I don't like the idea of them coming around shaking us down for more money, though. You know?
Excuse me?
Well, I don't like the idea of Clinton and Bush coming around and shaking the American people down for more money for the tsunami. I mean, because we've given $350 million of our own money, of the government has given away of our money, and then the American people themselves have given up another $200-something million. I mean, that's a lot of money. And now we got the mudslides in California to worry about. I just don't like when they trot out, the big guns to, to go to these corporations and, basically shake them down for money. I mean, I just don't like that. I mean, they use their former title is a leverage on these people to give them money. Are you going to turn down President Bush and Clinton to come knocking on your door?
Well,
I don't know. It's just my opinion.
Even if he did come knocking on my door, he wouldn't point a gun at my head and say, give money.
I know, but it's kind of hard to turn him down. We have, two former presidents. I mean, that's pretty, I don't know anybody be able to say no to those two. Do you? I mean, it'd be a tough.
I don't know how to answer that question.
I mean, it's a rough. No, I guess we don't know unless we're in that position. But I doubt if Bush and Clinton are going to come walking in here. But I'd kill over if they walked in here. But I don't know. I mean, I like that we're making these moves over in Asia to help our image out there. Do you agree with that? It's a good move.
I think it's an excellent move, Judge, and the best evidence of that is the reaction of some of the Muslim leaders over there who are worried that particularly in the Aceh province that got hit so badly in Indonesia, that we and other Western countries are making too good of an impression on the people who live there. So, you know, it's obviously very, very difficult to know what the ultimate outcome is going to be, but I have a strong feeling that the tsunami is going to have rather significant geopolitical repercussions.
Very good. Now, India, and I've noticed India, related to the tsunami, they're turning away all aid and everything else I've been reading. Apparently, they've even given aid to their fellow the fellow victims down there. They're trying to make themselves feel like they can handle their own problems, and they're trying to get a permanent seat on the Security Council of the UN. So they view it as that as this is their chance to show the world that they can take care of their own problems.
And I think they can. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, the magnitude of the disaster in India was quite small relative to what happened in Indonesia and Sri Lanka. Secondly, the Indians have the largest naval presence in that part of the world, and they were able to get relief, especially to Sri Lanka, much faster than even we could, because we had obviously a very significant distance to cover. So I don't see anything wrong at all, or any kind of challenge to us by the Indians wanting to take care of it themselves.
I'm not arguing with that either. I'm just saying it's very commendable that they're, a lot of these other countries are, taking this money, and India's saying no, we can handle ourselves, give it to the other, the more needy countries that need your help, need the help. So
yep.
It's highly commendable to them. Now in the chat room, there Oliver Queen, actually I remember that's Green Arrow, but Oliver Queen is saying that Japan's given $500 million, and Sly is saying today on NPR, actually Sly came over from the Michael Bednarik website. Today on NPR, they were bashing Saudi Arabia for not giving more. I heard that on Bill Riley, that's his radio show, that he thinks they only gave only $30 million.
That's my information as well.
Measly. And then Libya only gave like a $1 million, and there's a country, I think Mexico only gave $100,000.
Yeah.
So I think Bill O'Reilly is giving more than the whole country of Mexico has given to the thing. I mean, it's true. That's what he's saying. He gave a lot of money. But I mean, do you think that Saudi Arabia, I mean, what's wrong with them? They got billions sitting over there. Why don't they, help out? I mean, it's, it's in their area.
Well, I'll tell you, what it says to me is that people who are worried about Muslim solidarity across the world shouldn't be so worried. Because after all, 99% of the people who were killed and 99% of the people who were displaced are Muslims. Hmm. And yet it's the Arab Muslim countries are not exactly helping a lot. Now, the question is, why aren't they, considering they obviously have the financial means to do so? Hmm. And what I think that relates to is that Islam in the Indonesian area is quite different from Islam in the Arab area. In particular, everybody knows about Saudi Arabia exporting the Wahhabi version of Islam, the extremist version. Islam has practiced in the Indian Ocean area is a much more peaceful, laid-back kind of religion.
It does seem like that, because, I mean, they're showing on CNN, I don't know what network you're watching for the tsunami coverage, but I was glued on CNN because it was just amazing. The reach
they were the best.
Yeah, they had the reach. We may have disagreements where they handle themselves during the election or this and that, but my goodness, they're all over the thing. But, I mean, these people, I mean, I would thought it would happen. I think if that was me, I'd be devastated. I'd be sitting on a curb, crying or bewildered, and here they are, digging out. I mean, right as soon as after it happened, they're building, rebuilding, and cleaning out the rubble. It's amazing.
Yeah, it truly is. But what happened there just defies the imagination. Mm-hmm. It was a disaster of biblical proportions.
Yeah, and then it's just that I just hope though those our efforts. I mean, although we're not just doing it to change their opinions. I mean, America is a good-hearted country. Hopefully, that we'll get some of that goodwill back to us in the future.
Well, there's some hopeful signs. There they're hopeful signs because a lot of people in the Muslim community, particularly in the Middle East, are very concerned about our presence there. Of course, now that's an argument that would say that the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and so forth should send a lot of money. But, for instance, the Indonesian government doesn't want a lot of Wahhabis sent over to their country. They don't want Islamic extremists there. Mm-hmm. And also, while the Saudis and the Kuwaitis and the Emirates have a lot of money, they don't have ships.
True. Yeah, they don't have a navy or anything else. So
that's right. All
they can send is money. So, but hopefully they'd open up their wallets and send some money. Well, actually, they said they have, supposedly if the money pledge shows up, they'll be fine, because Anand says there's $4 billion pledged, and if that shows up, they should be fine in that region. I don't know.
I don't know whether he said that's enough.
Yeah.
He's worried about is that the amount that actually is received will be less than the amount that's pledged.
Yeah. That's
although at least in the case of individual Americans such as myself, I know the money that I've donated will be received because it was put on my credit cards.
Absolutely. Yeah. It won't be siphoned off by the UN or something like that like they did for the UN for oil for food fiasco.
Yeah, exactly.
Correct. Well, I know not a lot, but Doctors Without Borders, that was mine, and because they have a you could denote where this money's going. So you tsunami, you're somewhat assured that the money's going to the tsunami.
Yeah, mine went to, what was it, AmeriCorps?
Oh, very good. AmeriCorps. That's Clinton's group, isn't it? Or is that a different one? AmeriCorps, that's the Clinton's volunteer thing, isn't it?
It's AmeriCare.
AmeriCare, there you go, AmeriCare.
That was the one.
Now, what do you think of Colin Powell was on the Financial Times of London. I don't know if you read that or not, but saying that how he gives a bleak assessment of Iraq. He was saying that he would like to see U.S. troops leave as quickly as possible. It's not possible right now. It's not possible right now to say that by the end of 2005. It sounds like he's painting a very bleak picture of Iraq. What do you think of Powell?
It's difficult for me to answer that. I think where Powell is coming from is the Powell Doctrine, which comes from the initial Gulf War, 1990-1991, of when, if you're going to do it, you go in with overwhelming force. Mm-hmm. And we didn't do that. And I really have to distinguish between my support of the Bush policy on Iraq versus the prosecution of the war.
Or the execution of the war. True.
He did the right thing, but he didn't do it the right way.
Mm. Yeah, a lot of people are saying he should have done the Powell Doctrine and overwhelmed him with 500,000 troops like he did with Kuwait and Desert Storm.
That's right.
And that was never done. And now, continuing the frustration I have is Bush's refusal to admit that they won the war, but they apparently were losing the peace. Yeah, and he refused to acknowledge what's going on
well,
over there.
See, I don't have a problem with that because ask yourself this question. What good would it do for him to admit it?
Yeah, that's true. True. I mean, it'd make him look bad to the world that the President of the United States is admitting.
I mean, what would it accomplish?
Hmm.
Yeah. Would we be any better off? Would the Iraqis be any better off?
I don't know. If he would have said he made a mistake and sent more troops, perhaps it would have helped. But I don't know. It's hindsight's, was it 2020,
well,
right?
That's different. But simply saying, "Yeah, I made a mistake," and then and not doing anything different accomplishes absolutely nothing.
What do you think of Colin Powell as the Secretary of State? You think he did well, or you think he was kind of out there as a loose cannon? What do you think?
Oh, I think he was outnumbered.
But the neocons?
And simply didn't have the stature of Rumsfeld.
Mm-hmm.
And also within the State Department, the State Department is staffed primarily with people who are conservative in the sense that they never want to rock the boat. The key word for the State Department is and really always has been stability. So if you get a president who's willing to do things that destabilize, the State Department is going to be against it, and individual State Department officers can effectively not follow the orders of the Secretary of State. You know, there are a couple of blogs of, let's call them, renegade Foreign Service officers that are really, really good.
Wow.
One of them is the Daily Demarche, and the other is the Diplomad. And both of them have several writers, effectively all of whom are Republicans, who therefore have access to Grind. But these are guys who are on the ground and know things that if you're not there, you wouldn't know. So I would certainly recommend to everyone who's listening to this to go to those websites every day.
Very good. Well, we had, I don't know if you're familiar with Defense of the National Interest, Chet Richards' site.
Yeah, that one I'm not familiar with.
DNI.net, but his is also, I go to that one every day, and I go to yours a lot and some of the others, but so many out there, it's hard to, I don't know how you all do it with your bloggers. I mean, I have enough time juggling this show, I do a wrestling show, and I do my own blog about the show, and I work at the hotel. I don't know how you guys balance all your time out to do these blogs. I mean, it's amazing to me.
It's an addiction.
It must be, because, I mean, yours is one of the better laid out I've seen. I mean, some of them are kind of just, you know, slapped up there. Mine's like one of the form ones from Blogspot. But, I mean, yours, you can tell you went through a lot of time with it, and then you have the resources site you just put up. And like, I keep reading it, like, I mean, God, this guy must sit in his room all day and just do all this. You know what I mean? And you just wonder, where do you all find the time to just put all this information out there? It's amazing.
Well, in my case, being retired, it's either here or the golf course.
There you go.
And the addiction has gotten so bad that I've started playing less golf so I can spend more time blogging, which I can't believe I'm doing.
And it saves you some money, too. Golf's pretty, I don't know how much is where you're at, but out here, average round of golf is a little over $100-something out here.
Now, I live in a golfing community, so the variable cost isn't very much. Quite honestly, I've cut back because I just can't tear myself away from it. You get so involved. And I figure as long as I'm doing it, I want to make it good enough that I can attract a reasonably large audience.
Yeah. Well, it seems like you are. I mean, you get quite a few comments on your feedback on your comments and everything, so which is commendable. Actually, the chat room, I'm going to backtrack a little bit in the chat room. Oliver Queen saying that the inaugural ball should be canceled because the amount of money we're spending on it, $40 million. What do you think of that? But if the inauguration should be canceled or the balls should be canceled, I don't know.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, I mean it's.
We didn't cancel the World Series after 9/11.
Mm-hmm. True, we canceled the
Life must go on.
Yeah. And it's a celebration of our democracy, too, is the inauguration. I mean,
that's right. And also, I think this is correct, that some corporations are picking up part of the bill. The District of Columbia, much to its chagrin, I know, is picking up part of the bill. So it's not $40 million out of the federal budget.
True.
And I read somewhere, but can't independently verify, that Clinton's inauguration in 1996 cost more than $40 million.
It's amazing. All this money for these inaugurations, it's amazing.
So it works out to what? 12 or 13 cents per American?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm willing to pay 15 cents or whatever.
Yeah. Well, as long as I have a shrimp and some caviar, I'd be fine.
Yeah.
We're paying for all that, but trying back to the chat room. Some of them now they're wrangling over the aid still. Let me just read it. 2% of the population. Wait a minute. Indonesia, who are pissed that Western countries are given what they can, are more likely to become extremists. I don't know. I don't understand that one at all.
Say that again.
I'm reading. Oliver Queen saying, countries that don't give what they can look really, really bad. And those in Indonesia and elsewhere who are pissed that Western countries aren't giving what they can are more likely to become extremists. So I guess if those people in Indonesia and elsewhere are thinking that we're not giving enough, they're going to turn into extremists. What do you think of that? It's kind of hard to follow.
I consider that to be quite unlikely.
Yeah, I think
I don't think you become an extremist because you have a certain dollar figure in mind, and the actual dollar figure winds up being less.
True.
Because there would be, I mean, for every person who feels that way, there'll be others over there who will say, we don't want your money because with money comes influence and we don't want your influence.
Yeah.
In fact, there are probably more of those people.
That don't want us involved in that. They see the American ships coming. They don't want the all the modern of our culture affecting their culture, correct?
That's right.
Yeah. Now, what do you think? We got the Iraqi election coming up in over two weeks?
Yeah, on the 30th.
Yeah, what do you think is going to happen there now? Do you think, and they already said, Alawi said that some areas will not be able to vote because it's too dangerous. Look, if you have a crystal ball, what do you think is going to happen with that?
Yeah, it's a very cloudy crystal ball, Sean. I think we're going to go through with it because I think we have to. If we don't, Ayatollah Sistani will be very upset. And if we don't, then the Shia will turn against us.
True. And we really messed them up once before in Desert Storm, right? We didn't.
Sure enough.
Yeah, and I don't think we're going to do that again.
And that has not been forgotten.
Mm.
What worries me the most is if you think about the nature of the situation. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised if the terrorists unleash some very, very large explosion in Baghdad on Election Day.
Yeah.
I mean, something equivalent to Oklahoma City.
Oh, that'd be it's a chilling thought. Well, a lot of people are saying that probably the polling places might become killing fields.
They might.
Yeah.
I mean,
anything
who knows?
Yeah, anything can happen. Maybe nothing will happen, but it seems like it's such a big question mark over there in Iraq. And now, getting back to the new Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, what do you think of her now? Do you think she's going to have any problems going through the confirmation hearings in the Senate?
No.
No? They're gonna No? Do you think anybody's going to give her? I think the Democrats don't want to touch that. They want to look like they're beating her up too much because it might affect some of their constituencies. Is that correct?
Well, I think that she is an exceedingly capable person.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the majority of Democrats do also, even though they might disagree with what they believe her policies to be. But you can't really know what it is because she's not going to say something that disagrees with what Bush has said.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't really know what the distinction is. But above and beyond that, to be unpolitically correct. A, she's a woman, and B, she's black. And for the Democrats to block a black woman from assuming the National Security Advisor position would be political suicide.
Agreed. Yeah, because you know they'll trot her out on TV and everything, and they'll just make it look like they're, beating her up. And it's the imagery would be, I think, the death of the Democratic Party if they did that.
I just can't see them being stupid enough to do that.
Yeah. Well, I think they should just let pretty much any of his cabinet secretaries, they should let them soar through. And they're going to pick a fight over the Supreme Court. Because usually the presidents have pretty much their will over who's in their cabinet, correct?
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
And the, who was it? It was Senator Schumer the other day was saying that the criteria that senators use for Supreme Court appointments are far stricter than what they use for cabinet appointments because cabinet appointments, A, are not permanent. I mean, they're not life appointments. And B, everybody operates on the basis that the within bounds the president gets to have the cabinet he wants. So I don't think they're going to pick a fight over that. That would definitely be the wrong fight.
Yeah. Now, what do you think of, I don't know, if you're following the Supreme Court too much, but William Wainquist, do you think he's going to probably step down after the inauguration's over? It seems like he's Hastert's going to administer the oath to Cheney, and it's like Rehnquist is just going to be able to get up and give the oath to Bush, and that's it for him. Huh?
It certainly sounds that way, mm-hmm. but I haven't followed. You know, I'm not following that closely, but I would be surprised if it were any other way.
Yeah. Now, looking at the world situation, if you how you are in international, what the world community views us as of right now, do you have a read on that, how we're viewed across the world? Has our standing improved?
So far, no. Hmm. The most revealing thing I've seen is, according to a German blog called David's Media Critic, one German publication, I think it was Der Spiegel, had a poll of German opinion of Bush, and Bush got a 4% approval rating among Germans.
Oh, that's
four, F-O-U-R. And when I read that, it prompted me to post a comment on his blog saying that I would be willing to bet that the last time that 96% of all Germans agreed on anything was during the Third Reich.
I was just going to say that. Probably Hitler is the only one that's got that much of a rating. But
I think the change when it comes, and I think it will start, will occur first with government leaders and then with the general population, not the other way around.
So the leaders are going to influence the people about their view towards the United States?
Yeah, I think the leaders will start to come around.
Hmm.
And then, of course, if they start changing their opinion for whatever reason, then what they say to their publics will start to change, and that will start to have an influence. What's interesting in France is his name escapes me right now, but the guy who plans on challenging Chirac within Chirac's political party for the nomination for the presidency,
mm-hmm.
Is at least mildly pro-American.
Well, that's the end of his campaign, isn't it?
Excuse me?
That's the end of his campaign, isn't it?
Well, actually,
maybe not.
He seems to be picking up a fair amount of support because on domestic issues, evidently, there is a fair amount of disapproval of Chirac in France. They have a very high unemployment rate, and the economy has stalled out. So I would not hazard a guess as to the outcome. I presume that Chirac is still the favorite. But it is interesting that someone who is, let's call it, far less anti-American, is considered by the European pundits to at least have a fighting chance against Chirac.
Good for him. Good for him. Now, what about England? I mean, Tony Blair, he's putting himself up for re-election, I think, this year, I believe.
Probably in my English friends tell me it'll probably be in May.
Oh. Now, it seems like his approval ratings have turned around over there. For a while, they were, you know, bashing him over the head for the Iraq business, but it seems like now his approval ratings are bobbing up. I think last I saw, he was like 47% approval
yep.
ratings.
So yep. He seems to have turned the corner.
Hmm.
The Conservative Party has boxed itself into kind of an untenable position over there in that they're effectively in denial of what they said earlier because they were in favor of intervention in Iraq. So they're kind of in the same position that Kerry was in.
Hmm. So hopefully, you think Tony Blair is going to be reelected? It seems like it. I mean, we haven't heard, at least on American press, anybody really being a serious challenge to him.
Yeah, I think he will be. God knows, I hope he will be.
Yeah, it seems like he's, of course, they've been the best friend of the United States, in this whole mess with Iraq and everything else. But now looking
it would be a major setback if he were eliminated.
Yeah.
But know, Howard, the leader of the Conservative Party, is not the world's most impressive figure. And he voted in favor of England's participation in the Iraqi invasion. And I'm sure that Blair could make use of that fact rather well.
How about Germany's Prime Minister? Was it Schroeder?
Schroeder?
Yeah, how's he doing?
He is evidently quite unpopular because the German economy is also not doing well. It's flattened out, and they have roughly a 10% unemployment rate. So you've got an interesting situation where neither Schreck nor Schroeder are particularly popular in their own countries, which I think serves to explain their anti-American attitudes, because we serve as the enemy.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think they're also probably hoping to trump up some votes for themselves by bashing America.
Oh, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Especially Chirac and Schroeder, because they're one of the big two that are against the Iraq invasion. And
yep.
We only have a minute left. Now, give the listeners your blog address one more time, Mark.
Okay. It's American Future, all one word as far as the spelling is concerned. AmericanFuture.typepad, that's T as in Ted, Y, P as in Peter, E, P as in Peter, A, D as in dog, .com. So AmericanFuture.typepad.com.
Anything coming up tonight or in the morning that you think people want to read, or you working on anything for the blog?
I should have it up on my... PC. Hold on a second.
Okay.
What did I just do?
Hope you give the show a good review now.
Oh, I certainly will. the time has gone really fast.
I know. It's been a quick hour. Usually the hour just flies.
And let me just give you an idea.
Okay, because this show is archived over on spankwagon.net as well. You click on archive, and then it'll be up there eventually.
Okay. Well, let me give you the title of some of the things that have gone up this evening.
All right.
First one is entitled A Worried Terrorist, and it talks about the head of one of the Islamist groups in the Indian Ocean area being concerned about the people liking Americans too much. There's also a post on the new chief of staff at the UN. We didn't get to talk about the UN, which is too bad, because there's a lot to say about the UN.
Well, we'll just have to have you come back in a couple of weeks to bash the UN.
Okay. Also talk about a British organization called the New Frontiers Foundation.
I read that. Very good. Very good article. And then what's the other thing you're writing about, too? The Europeans, some with the EU, correct?
Yep. And then also an article on the mental sickness of some Arab doctors who don't want to help the victims of the tsunami for various reasons.
Wow. All right. Well, everybody listening, we'll have to go over to your blog to check that out, because the other show is bringing down our necks to start. And, Mark, thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you. My pleasure, and I'd be happy to do it again.
Very good. Very good. We will have you back on in a few weeks to go over the UN and the after effects of the election in Iraq. So thank you very much, Mark.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
That was Mark Shulman. Bye-bye. From the AmericanFuture.typepad. Oh, my God. AmericanFuture.typepad.com. This almost said MaxiPad. I don't think
that's wrong. Especially after the guy gets off the phone.
No. I almost murdered his... It's AmericanFuture.typepad.com. All right, very good. No, I was.
Is there a triple W, or is it just HTTP?
HTTP.
/.
No, I was at the store buying.
Okay, no triple W.
I'm driving my sister's car. I had to go to the grocery store and buy a few things, and that was on one. That's why it's in my head.
That's out of line.
So if anybody takes offense to that, that's why that was on the top of my head. So anyway, next week.
I was about to say, what are you thinking about?
Next week, we're going to have a geopolitical review on as well, so we're going to keep on the foreign policy bit a little bit. Where are the girls? They're not coming in, I guess. Oh, well.
I don't know.
And once again, this is subject to discussion. I'm Sean O'Mac, and thank you, Khan, for for producing the show. There you go. Almost called you Saab. Almost said Spank Wagon. Subject, the number 2, discussion.com is the blog, and my email is...
What is it?
Subject, the number 2, and then discussion.com. And then you go off the LV Rocks website. Just click on the logo for subject to discussion.
Well, so, what else is the email? Just
email. I don't want to give these people out my email address. Are you crazy? No, I'm
kidding.
Well,
I mean, what's the one on the site? Don't you have a contact?
Yeah, it's on there. If it's you go to the... I'm not giving... Let them go to the blog,
okay.
And they could email me off the blog. I need some traffic, too, you know. Anyway, good night, and have a pleasant tomorrow.